Welcome back. I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. Yesterday, South Africans held a memorial service for the 44 striking platinum miners who were shot to death by police last week. The National Post reports that violence between rival labor unions exposed deadly levels of anger about low wages and what is seen as political favoritism in Africa's biggest economy. The incident has highlighted the African National Congress's failure to ease income disparity, which remains among the worst in the world. While many of its members are accused of using political connections to get rich, South Africa's per capita GDP is over $8,000 a year, but nearly 40% of the population live on less than $3 a day. David Smith is covering this for The Guardian. He's their Africa correspondent based in Johannesburg, and he will join us in just a couple of minutes. And 2 weeks ago, most of us had never heard of six-term Republican Representative Todd Akin of Missouri. Last Sunday, a local TV reporter asked him about his opposition to abortion, even when a woman is raped. He said that if it's a, quote, legitimate rape, the female body has, quote, ways to try to shut that whole thing down. Well, it's safe to assume that he's now a household name, and he's refused to step out of the Missouri Senate race despite calls from fellow Republicans. His comments and the reaction is still dominating headlines. So what's the real story here? Well, we've noticed two angles that are missing from most media coverage. First off, the congressman was clearly caught off guard because questions about abortion and rape are all too rare. And what do women in Missouri currently face? 97% of Missouri counties have no abortion provider, and anti-choice legislators in Missouri support legislation that would restrict access to birth control. And it should be noted that many anti-choice bills have passed under a Democratic governor. So where are these angles, and what questions should reporters be asking? RH Reality Check has been covering this extensively. Jody Jacobson is editor-in-chief with RH Reality Check. That's a website focusing on reproductive and sexual health and justice issues. Hi, Jody. Welcome back to the show.
Hey, Rose. Thanks for having me.
It's great to have you. So as we always do, as you know, on Friday, we start off on a positive note and give kudos to a reporter who did a good job this week. So what did you see this week that you thought was done well?
Well, I actually think there's a couple of pieces I'd love to highlight. One is this article in the New Yorker, by Jane Mayer. She writes an article entitled Schmooze or Lose, and it's a really in-depth look at how the fundraising from large donors comes about in both campaigns these days. She looks at the Romney and the Obama campaigns and how they schmooze with very, very high-end donors and who's winning the race in raising money from those donors. And I found it both very interesting and really important in terms of how money is circulating in the campaigns after Citizens United especially.
Yeah, I actually heard her on Terry Gross yesterday, and I too thought that the behind-the-scenes information was fascinating, especially the fact that a lot of wealthy Democrats are mad at President Obama because he doesn't schmooze with them enough, doesn't thank them enough like Bill Clinton did. So that was interesting. But the other thing, though, what did you think about her reporting about the Obama administration and its reluctance to really take part in all of this big donor fundraising? And for me, I thought, well, you know, why don't they talk about that more, that they don't really like taking part in this?
I know. I wonder about that, too, because I think what they're doing is standing on principle and not getting much credit for it. On the other hand, I don't know whether that's partly a strategy not to further turn off large-scale donors. I'm just not sure. But, yeah, I mean, I think it's very interesting that clearly the Obama campaign in 2008 was phenomenally successful at raising funds from individuals and online. And I think that part of the reason they may not be as fundamentally successful with that same project this time is because they sort of forgot about those people that they had cultivated as being activists and didn't engage them in between times as much. And so now I think probably, you know, they're focusing in that on that area as a principle and as a way of broadening support for the campaign, but may not either have done enough to cultivate those folks in a different way than you might have to, you know, the billionaires.
Right. And it was also interesting to hear that billionaires are now funneling their money to, say, for example, specific propositions or causes rather than just writing a check to the DNC.
I also found that really interesting. I did not realize the extent to which people were doing that. And I don't necessarily think that's a bad thing because, you know, when you have somebody, for example, who's willing to put their money into preventing anti-LGBT legislation, that's a great thing. And, you know, I think the other side is certainly doing that kind of thing. So I don't necessarily think it's a bad thing. But, of course, when you're running a campaign, you also want that money.
Right. Well, and we're going to do extensive coverage in the next couple of weeks on what's going on with the Republican and Democratic conventions. We'll do shows about that. And then we're also going to talk about independents because they're being kind of ignored in this race. So that's what we're going to talk about on Monday. And that is Jody Jacobson, editor-in-chief with RH Reality Check. And now I would like to welcome David Smith. He has been covering the horrific shooting in South Africa last week that left 44 striking platinum miners dead. There was a memorial service yesterday. And David is the Guardian's Africa correspondent based in Johannesburg. Hi, David. Welcome to the show.
Hi, how are you?
Hi, good, thank you. It sounds like you're on location somewhere.
No, I'm actually at a Young Communicators Award ceremony where I'm one of the judges. And it's, you know, all I would add is that, you know, this time last week I was at the mine where this massacre happened. Elsewhere in South Africa, and it was a very bleak and depressing day. And where I am now is at the other side of the country, sort of lying. Brilliant, young, inspiring teenagers who are doing public speaking, and you know, as ever, along this day, you know, there are two sides to the South African story, and today's a very upbeat, optimistic one, you know, right where I'm sitting.
Well, so we'll try to hear you as well as we can, but why don't we just dive in? Where are you seeing? Maybe you can move to a quieter place, actually, because it is pretty loud. But, David, we always start off on a positive note on Friday and give kudos to a reporter who did a good job this week. So what did you see this week that you thought was done well?
You're right. I'm really sorry. It is quite loud here, and I'm fighting through a crowd to get somewhere quieter. So I couldn't quite hear your question. Would you mind repeating it?
Yeah, so we always start off on a positive note on Fridays, and I'm just wondering what you saw this week that you thought was done well. Giving kudos to a reporter.
What I saw that was done well in South Africa this week?
Oh, it can be anything.
Sorry?
It can be a report about anything.
A report about anything?
Yes.
Sorry?
All right, you know, maybe you didn't... Maybe you
didn't. Question again, I'm really sorry.
Yeah, maybe you didn't get our email about this. So why don't we just dive in and talk about what happened in South Africa. So first off, can you talk to us about these miners specifically? They were platinum miners. Can you tell us more about them?
Yes. They are among, you know, people who've been mining in South Africa for more than 100 years. Clearly, it's a huge mining country. These miners, many of them actually have traveled a long way to work in this small town near Rustenburg in northwest province South Africa. Some of the dead were actually from Lesotho and Swaziland, a neighboring country. Others come from Eastern Cape Province, and you know, many of them are impoverished and often, you know, victims of an education system that many agree has a lot of problems. And, you know, when I visited, sadly, many of them were living in an informal settlement, tin shacks with few facilities, the water supply is intermittent. Many of them using pit toilets. It's a very difficult existence, and you know, they are paid a relatively small amount, and that was what really led to this dispute. They were demanding a wage increase, and that led to the violence and eventually the terrible shooting just over a week ago that left 34 of them dead, and overall on the weekend, 44 people died, including police officers.
And how is this being covered in South Africa? I noted an op-ed by the National Post that says that the violence between rival labor unions exposed deadly levels of anger about these low wages. And there's also a lot of pressure on the government. A lot of the workers say that after this happened, they drove through their neighborhoods in nice cars. A lot of people saying that they have no idea what the poor actually go through on a regular basis.
Yeah, the South African media were shocked. It obviously got massive coverage. In fact, some TV journalists and others were at the scene already when this massacre happened. And I think, as ever, that really made the story all the more prominent because people's deaths were actually televised to an extent and TV showed these shocking pictures over and over. So it has led to a lot of debate and hand-wringing and commentators sort of talking about the issues and the background of these difficult mining conditions. And indeed, part of that debate, as you're suggesting, is the fact that South Africa is arguably the most unequal society in the world. It rivals Brazil and one or two others, but it's right at the top of that. And clearly mining is one of the most brutal illustrations because, it's one of the richest countries in the world in terms of mineral resources. And you have people living above these platinum deposits and making very little from it. So when I was there last weekend, a sort of maverick youth leader in the governing party who was expelled recently, Julius Malema, was really whipping up a lot of feeling and anger. And he is a strong advocate of nationalizing South Africa's mines, taking them under government control and really saying once and for all, we've had enough of British and other private companies exploiting South Africa's resources as they have done for more than 100 years. It's time to share the wealth among all the workers and the people. And clearly, many economists and political opponents say nationalization is not the way to do that. And point to examples where they say it's failed elsewhere. But that debate has resurfaced in the media partly because of what's happened. And really, the massacre, the incident was a moment when South Africa's brutal inequalities were again really laid bare. And it's a stark reminder of how far the country still has to go, even after 18 years of democracy after the end of apartheid.
Yeah, and are the inequalities also included in the coverage you've been seeing? 40% of the population living on less than $3 a day? Is that also included?
Yes.
Or is this just common knowledge?
I think that, a positive thing I would say about South Africa generally is that however bad the problems are, there is no lack of awareness and debate. Almost every day the newspapers are full of columnists and editorials and others discussing these issues and saying that something needs to be done. I think South Africa has huge self-awareness and self-consciousness and issues of both economic inequalities and obviously race, which remains a big issue here, and the two are always intertwined. But as somebody who's lived here for over 3 years, my great hope always for the country is that when terrible things happen, it's impossible to draw a veil of silence over it. This is a feisty constitutional democracy with a very vibrant media, and what happened at Marikana with this shooting has indeed prompted more discussion over inequalities and what should be done to resolve that problem, which still still runs very, very deep.
And also, based on the reporting, it seems like the unions actually have power there. I mean, there have been strikes since the shootings last week. And what do you expect in the weeks to come?
Yes, so in the unions are very, very strong in South Africa. They were a crucial part of the anti-apartheid movement during years of white minority rule. And so, you know, when democracy came, they were not going to go away. And the major sort of Congress of South African Trade Unions is a close partner of the governing African National Congress. And it's a very unusual place. You have, in government, you have people who are self-declared capitalists, but also self-declared communists. And that leads to divisions and a lot of debate, as you can imagine. The unions wield huge influence over the president and very much also in sort of clashing with employers. Already since this massacre, there have been reports of some wildcat strikes breaking out at other mines. It doesn't seem to be spreading dramatically yet, but it must be watched. And, you know, there could be a knock-on effect there. And it's symptomatic of how, you know, almost every year there are often sort of public sector strikes when the unions kind of rally a lot of people to march on the streets. People on the left, people of the socialist bent would applaud this and say it's healthy that unions do bargain for workers' rights here. There is a critique, though, that says the unions just look after their own and work hard to protect the people in jobs and thereby ignore the huge numbers of people in South Africa who are unemployed and who have no union to represent them. You know, the unemployment figure is, I think, officially literally 1 in 3 people of working age, and also 1 in 4 officially. People say that, you know, unofficially it's more like 1 in 3. And again, many of those are young and black and male.
We're speaking with David Smith. He is the Guardian's Africa correspondent based in Johannesburg. He'll be with us for just a few more minutes. So if you'd like to, if you have a comment or a question about coverage of the platinum mining strike in South Africa, we'd love to hear from you. 866-798-8255. South Africa extracts about 75% of the world's platinum. And there have been so many articles just about how platinum prices are going up. And they've been interviewing a lot of analysts about what this means for the future of platinum pricing. 866-798-8255. You can also leave a comment at yourcallradio.org. We're also joined by Jody Jacobson, editor-in-chief with RH Reality Check. And Jody, we're going to talk about President Zuma's recent comments about women in a minute, but I'm wondering, do you have any questions for David?
No, not at this moment.
Okay, so let's talk about that, because I'd like to get you both to jump in on this. David, here in the U.S., we've had a firestorm of commentaries about Congressman Todd Akin's theory about, quote, legitimate rape. And President Jacob Zuma recently gave an interview in which he said, quote, being single is not right and kids are important to a woman because they actually give extra training to a woman to be a mother. And this is Women's Month in South Africa. Here in the U.S., it's Women's Equality Day on Sunday. You wrote about this, and there's a photo of Jacob Zuma with his 3 wives. How is this being covered in South Africa?
I haven't seen a huge backlash against this, although, funny enough, where I picked up the story was the Mail and Guardian newspaper on its website. What really caught my eye was that they ran a story with the headline, Jacob Zuma has his Todd Akin moment. And with the headline, I thought, oh, what's this about? And it obviously went through everything you said and this gaffe the president made. Interestingly, only a couple of hours later, I noticed that website had changed its headline to remove Todd Akin. Either they thought it would not translate to South African audiences, or I did wonder, you know, has the presidency complained about this? Because on a scale of gaffes, maybe Jacob Zuma's was not as bad as Todd Akin's and not quite a resignation offense in South Africa. But, I mean, all of that said, clearly feminists and gender equality activists and others that I spoke to were outraged that the head of state could say this and was seen as very retrogressive and, you know, undermining the South African constitution, which, again, is one of the country's great plus points, that the constitution does guarantee equality for all, irrespective of gender and sexuality and other characteristics. But funnily enough, in South Africa, it's not a massive story. In fact, when I left home today, the TV news was dominated not by this, nor by the Marikana mine aftermath, but actually by the death of a hippopotamus that had wandered into a swimming pool people were trying to rescue. And I think one of the reasons it's not dominating is that partly people are just used to it. Jacob Zuma has a history of inappropriate comments regarding both women and gay and lesbian people, and partly because there are there's a diversity of opinion in South Africa. Not everyone is liberal or some would say politically correct. Zuma, with comments like this, is possibly trying to appeal to the heartland, some cultural traditionalists who do indeed believe that a woman's place is in the home and raising children. He may be trying to reach out to that constituency with this kind of remark. In the last couple of hours, I literally just received an email from the South African presidency where they were trying to clarify what he meant by these comments, and it was pitching it in terms of trying to look after family values in South Africa and the government policy on the need to preserve family. But I don't think that will wash with his critics.
Jody, do you think that comments by people like President Zuma changes coverage? I mean, it seems like more women are speaking out against these comments. What are your thoughts on that?
What do you mean changes coverage? I'm not clear on the question.
Well, I mean, do you think that for a place like South Africa, for example, have you been following this at all?
Yeah, I've seen it.
And so what do you think about the coverage when someone like Zuma comes out and says that women need to have children? Do you think that reporters take the initiative to kind of say, well, what is the status of women's issues in South Africa?
Well, I haven't followed the extent of the press coverage of the issue. I do know about the issue, and I've read a couple articles about it, so I don't think I'm equipped to say what the extent of the coverage has been, perhaps as much as David is. But my feeling is that, we will cover this. We've been swamped with the Todd Akin thing. But, I think what people are missing and what isn't being tied together in the media is that these things are not, the fact that Todd Akin said what he said and the GOP platform is what it is and President Zuma says that these are not isolated, sort of randomly concurrent things. They are part of a resurgence of an anti-woman, anti-women's rights theology and ideology throughout the world. And I think people feel more and more comfortable saying these things because of the resurgence of that ideology in many different countries.
Well, right. And George Galloway is speaking out also, and we'll read a quote that he just made a couple days ago after we come back from a short break. You can join us at 866-798-8255 or yourcallradio.org. We'll be back after this.
You're listening to Your Call on Local Public Radio, KALW. All of the stories you hear recommended on the Friday Media Roundtable are posted at yourcallradio.org, and they're also included in Your Call's weekly email newsletter. It's free and easy to sign up for. Just click the email newsletter link at yourcallradio.org. And you can highlight the reporting you thought was valuable this week by calling 866-798-8255. That's 866-798-TALK. Or send an email to feedback@yourcallradio.org.
This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. Coming up on Monday, we'll have a conversation about independence. Last year, the percentage of Americans identifying as political independents increased to 40%, but they are being almost ignored by both Republicans and Democrats this year. So we're going to open the lines. If you're an independent, we'd love to hear from you on Monday. What issues do you care about? How are you voting? And where do you fit within the two-party political system? That's on Monday. Today, it's our weekly media roundtable, and we are joined by David Smith. He is the Guardian's Africa correspondent based in Johannesburg. He has been covering the deadly shooting of 44 striking platinum miners last week. We're also joined by Jody Jacobson, editor-in-chief with RH Reality Check, and she has been extensively covering all of the controversy surrounding Republican Congressman Todd Akin and also the questions that some reporters are missing. And before the break, we were talking about how leaders around the world make these comments. And just a couple of days ago, Respect Party MP George Galloway in the UK had a broadcast called Goodnight with George Galloway, in which he said that rape allegations leveled at the WikiLeaks founder Julian Assange had no basis because having sex with a woman when she is asleep is not rape. He said it would be nice if you would tap her on the shoulder, but if she's asleep and she's in your bed, that's not rape. So you've got these comments coming down on a regular basis. And as Jody said, this is becoming kind of the norm now. And we have a couple calls on South Africa. So let's hear from Max in Berkeley. Hi, Max. Welcome to the show.
Good morning. And thank you for a good program and for taking my call. Yes, I read the South African press, especially the Mail and Guardian. I am always appreciative of the vigor with which Zapiro tackles Mr. Zuma and his shenanigans. But I have a question specifically for Mr. Smith having to do with the state of the coalition in power. There's been some real tension between COSATU, Vavi of COSATU, and the leadership of the ANC. I'd like him to comment on that. Some people are warning that we may be seeing some real disintegration there of the coalition, perhaps an exaggeration. But I'll take your answer off the air. And again, thank you for a good program.
All right, thank you. David?
Yes, I think, you know, opinions are divided indeed. Many weeks goes by when there is not commentary speculating that the tripartite alliance in South Africa, which is the governing African National Congress, plus COSATU, which is the trade union movement, plus the Communist Party, some would say communist in name only, how long can they stay together? Would it benefit the trade union movement actually to break away from the ANC and to express itself and, it shows it can mobilize people? Would it fare well as a political party? This is debated. It's hard to say. Some people argue that they have a share of power right now. Why put that at risk? Why walk away and face possible defeat in an election, and not least losing all those privileges of the luxury cars and the nice offices, and some would say the allegedly corrupt tender contracts. And what the gentleman's referring to, indeed, the current leader of the trade union movement, Mr. Vavi, is being described in many media reports as increasingly critical of President Jacob Zuma. He helped bring Zuma to power and does not feel that the promises have been delivered. However, what one reads that others in the trade union movement are less inclined to go against Zuma and actually still support him. So even within the trade union body, there's disagreement on this. And I think for now, they will contest the next election in 2014 with the ANC again. But in the long term, many people do feel that, this broad church, this unholy alliance cannot hold together forever. And eventually there will be a significant split. In Zimbabwe, the trade unions eventually formed the political party, the Movement for Democratic Change, which is a very strong rival for President Robert Mugabe, and most people would say actually defeated him in the last election and then is now part of a unity government with him. So there is a precedent elsewhere, and it's very hard to know what's in the crystal ball.
Well, we're going to have a more in-depth discussion about this because there are so many issues to this. David, we'd love to have you back in the near future.
Thanks so much.
Okay, thank you. That's David Smith. He is the Guardian's Africa correspondent based in Johannesburg, and you can find his reporting along with other articles about the striking platinum miners. 44 were shot to death by police last week, and yesterday there was a memorial service. And we're going to switch gears now and talk about what's happening with all of the coverage with Republican Representative Todd Akin of Missouri and the questions that many reporters are not asking about what women in Missouri actually face currently. And we are joined by Jody Jacobson, editor-in-chief with RH Reality Check. And I would also like to welcome Joe Mannies to the show. Joe covered politics for the St. Louis Dispatch for almost 30 years before retiring, and then she moved to the Beacon, where I understand, Joe, your back room has become a must-read for political junkies. Thank you for joining us, Joe.
Well, thank you for having me.
So, as someone who lives in Missouri, I'm just wondering, have you received many phone calls from national reporters asking you, since you are such a longtime political reporter, what is actually happening on the ground in Missouri?
Yes, I actually have. Not so much from newspapers, but from a lot of radio stations and some TV outlets. I've covered Todd Akin for over 20 years, so I do know him. I know him quite well, in fact. And what's happening in Missouri is, I think some on the coast maybe not really get what's going on in Missouri. What he was talking about, and I'm not justifying anything that he said, but his basic view about no exceptions to allow abortion in the case of rape is fairly widely held among some Republican and anti-abortion activists in the state. He's not like out alone on that particular view. Missouri has we have a sizable block of religious conservatives and evangelicals and some pretty active anti-abortion groups that go back to when Roe v. Wade was put in place in the early 1970s. Missouri long has been a hotbed over the abortion issue on both sides, and our legislature long has been dominated by abortion opponents.
Well, and Jody, that's the one piece that has been mostly missing from a lot of the coverage is what is actually already on the books in Missouri. It's one of the only states that has sent multiple challenges to Roe v. Wade all the way to the Supreme Court. Have you seen this covered in many places?
No, I haven't seen in-depth coverage of Missouri particularly, and especially not in the past few weeks. You know, I think that there's two issues here. One's what has been happening at the states, and Missouri is one among those states where there's been tremendous anti-choice activity over the past couple of years. We've seen in any given of the last 3 years either over or nearly 1,000 bills and restrictions, either proposed or passed into law on women's rights, women's health, women's choices by the anti-choice community in the states. And Missouri, South Dakota, a lot of the very conservative states where ultra-conservative legislatures are in place have those kinds of laws or are leading in those kinds of laws that are intended in many cases to challenge existing abortion law.
And many of these laws have passed under a Democratic governor, right?
Yes.
And that also hasn't gotten much attention. It's sort of everybody's slamming Republicans for their anti-choice views. But in many of these states, they are led by Democratic governors.
Yes, we have real problems with, Democrats and Republicans alike. I would say that in the case of the GOP is sort of it's a tenet of the GOP platform and faith to be rather radically anti-choice at this point. And what I mean by that is, anti-birth control, trying to outlaw IVF, which is what many of these personhood bills do, and so on. But what we see on the part of some Democrats is that they are either extremely weak in protecting women's rights or they themselves are anti-choice. And it's a real problem for women because we don't have an alternative party that unquestionably and unequivocally supports the basic human rights of women to make their own health care decisions, irrespective of the fact that the president has said that that's his position.
And Joe Manese, how are the local media covering this issue? You've got NARAL Pro-Choice America giving Missouri an F on abortion access, and it's the legislature defunded Planned Parenthood back in the early 1990s.
Yeah, well, actually, what happened, it was actually in the late 1990s, what happened in Missouri is that Planned Parenthood, for a number of years under then-Governor Mel Carnahan, who was a Democrat, was part of the, it was a statewide network that he had helped set up for contraceptive services and other women's health services. And that was pretty much dismantled by within the last 10 years, in part because Carnahan left office. He also died. And what's happened is that the Democratic governors since then have faced large Republican majorities controlling the legislature who have voted to, first it was to excise Planned Parenthood. Then when that didn't fly in the courts to do it by itself, they just excised the whole program. So Planned Parenthood is still influential in the state because, frankly, they operate the only abortion clinics in the state, and they do provide, frankly, what's left of the family planning services, but it's totally privately funded. The state doesn't have any money that goes towards family planning anymore.
And 97% of Missouri counties have no abortion provider.
That's true. That's true. People in Missouri, people generally have to either drive to the Kansas City area. There's one that has been in place in on the Kansas side over there for a while. There's been clinics off and on in Springfield, Missouri, which is in southwest Missouri. I don't think there's one there now. There's one that closed several years ago. There is one in St. Louis that a separate arm of Planned Parenthood does operate, and there's also one across the river in Illinois. But that's, you're right, people in Missouri, women in Missouri who need these services, if they don't live in the metropolitan areas, must drive long distances to get there.
You know, the other thing, Jody, that was striking about all of this is that it seemed like Representative Akin was completely caught off guard, because it's very rare for reporters to ask pointed questions about issues like abortion and rape. And this TV reporter, local TV reporter Charles Jacko, his question was, what about in the case of rape? Should it be legal or not? And it really struck me, because you don't hear that question asked very much. Why do you think that is?
Well, I think two things. I think we talk about abortion an awful lot, but with not a great deal of nuance or finesse. And I think that a lot of the mainstream media, or I'm sorry to say, you know, male media figures don't have as in-depth an understanding of these issues as they might. And that doesn't necessarily mean that there aren't some women that are lacking in the same way, because there are. But so I think that, you know, they sort of take for granted that, you know, that there's sort of a blanket issue here. They don't delve into the different specifics. And I think that this came about because there is an increasing effort on the part of the radical anti-choice movement to eliminate any exceptions whatsoever for abortion care. And, you know, in talking about that, I just want to make clear that personally and from a public health and medical standpoint, there is no support, there is no basis of evidence of support to have any exceptions for abortion care before viability, because what happens is that you end up with women doing other things to terminate a pregnancy. So I don't feel comfortable myself coming across as legitimizing the quest to keep a rape and incest exception, because I don't think that's acceptable in and of itself. That being said, what we're driving toward here, with all the state laws, the attempts to pass personhood laws, the Sanctity of Life bill that was co-sponsored by Representative Ryan and Representative Aiken, those are personhood bills, which would make a fertilized egg a person under the law of the United States, would outlaw and ban all abortions, would ban birth control, IVF, criminalize miscarriage. It's just got huge implications. And I think because we're now seeing so many of these laws being pushed, people are awakening to the fact that these people mean business.
Right. Well, and the laws are being passed. Joe Mannings, what are your thoughts on a reporter's responsibility to really ask these pointed questions? And why doesn't it happen more often?
Well, I think it depends on the contest. One of the reasons, I think, is that reporters have a number of issues that they want to ask about. And if the candidate is focusing on certain issues, and let's say the reporter only has 5 minutes or something, they're often not going to ask about issues that the candidate, regardless of party, isn't emphasizing. I've been covering the abortion issue in Missouri for close to about 30 years. So I always do a story around the time of the Roe v. Wade anniversary because we always have march. We have people who travel to Washington, D.C. to march against it. We have abortion rights activists here who usually hold events to market. So I've been covering this and the candidates on these issues for a long time. But I think that what I have noticed is that increasingly candidates and office holders, particularly the social conservatives, are more upfront about the fact that they either only support a few exceptions for abortion or don't support any, except perhaps the life of the mother. In the case of Aiken, for example, he really only supports abortion in the case of ectopic pregnancies. Other than that, you know, he supports no exceptions because it's his belief that in most life of the mother cases, something can be worked out and to preserve the life of the mother and the fetus. I mean, this is his contention. And he's not the only official in the state that believes that way. And then you have the Democrats who, because they have seen the swing to the right within the state within the last 20 years, have become more hesitant to talk about it. We used to have some prominent Democrats who were opposed to abortion rights, Tom Eagleton for one. That's pretty much gone. Most of the statewide Democrats do support abortion rights or something close to it, but they just don't talk about it. And if you try to get them to talk about it, most of them won't, or if they do, they just want to talk about it and quickly and move on. And that's all of them, including Senator McCaskill. They would rather talk about other issues because they see this as something that hurts them with Catholics, who are a large bloc in Missouri. It hurts them, they think, with rural swing voters. I have watched this evolve over the last 20 years, and it is a phenomenon that I'm sure maybe it's in other states as well, but it's definitely something that's been happening here, where the candidates just don't want to talk about it.
And that is Joe Manny. She covered politics for the St. Louis Dispatch for almost 30 years before retiring, and then she moved over to the Beacon, where she writes her backroom column. We're also joined by Jody Jacobson, editor-in-chief with RH Reality Check, a website focusing on reproductive and sexual health issues. And we've got just about over 5 minutes left, and we'd love to hear from you. What are your thoughts on the wall-to-wall coverage given to Representative Todd Aiken? Did you hear much about what women are facing in Missouri? And really, just this onslaught of anti-choice bills that are passing across the country. 866-798-8255. How do you think this issue should be covered? You can also leave a comment at yourcallradio.org or email feedback@yourcallradio.org. And I also just wanted to ask you both about, I don't know, the ease with which, I guess, we now talk about rape. I haven't seen this number in many places, but Jody, I was wondering what you thought about this. According to the American Journal of Obstetrics and Gynecology, OBGYN will say, among adult women, an estimated 32,000 pregnancies result from rape every year in the United States.
Yes, that's the figure. And that is considered to be, you know, at least slightly underreported because of the number of rapes that are not reported.
Right.
So, yeah, that's the figure. I mean, pregnancy, you know, I've struggled with what to call Representative Aiken's position, and I just want to underscore here that we've focused on Representative Aiken, but Representative Aiken said at an inopportune political time what the GOP means. Uh-huh. Its platform is a ban on abortions without exception and a law that would outlaw hormonal birth control, among other things. So I think we have to realize that we're focusing on one guy, and as Joe said earlier, there are many others that think this way. The platform is based on this now. And I've been struggling with what to call it, because to call it a theory or junk science even is to legitimize it. Mm. It's like hocus pocus. There is no biological or other evidence for this idea that there's not, quote, a legitimate rape or that you can't get pregnant during rape. And so, yes, you have a conversation going on now where, you know, many women in this country have been raped and have had pregnancies due to rape, and to tell them that those were fictitious is another form of victimizing them. It's just horrific the way that we are minimizing what happens to women. And think about this in the global context. Rape is used as a weapon of war. Impregnating women is a way that, you know, people in Darfur have fought the battle there, and in Bosnia. I mean, we have international war crimes around rape and war and the purposeful impregnation of women. Mm. So it's just really profound that these men do not even understand what they're talking about and that they are in charge of public policy.
And you were referring to the 2012 Republican Party platform. Right.
Yes.
And we're going to do shows about that. Joe Manny's Jody makes an interesting point about how you should refer to this. I mean, how should you deal with someone who makes these claims? I mean, this morning, NPR had a feature on the Family Research Council, who's still supporting Aiken, and they said they're receiving calls from doctors who are defending him.
Yeah, well, I would say, you know, trusting the Family Research Council on something, like, let's name those doctors, and are they the American College of OBGYNs? No.
Well, so how should the media deal with this?
It's completely unfounded nonsense. I mean, it's as if I said to you, you know what, Rose, I really think the moon is made of cheese, and I really think we should have a media firestorm to ask the question of whether I'm right that the moon is made of cheese. I mean, it's just that simple. You know, one guy in the 1980s made up this thing based on something he found in a Nazi concentration camp record. That's where this comes from.
And this is the doctor that Romney supported at one
Wilkie,
time.
Yeah, right. who he's met with as early as last year. I mean, it's just whose endorsement he touted.
Joe Manny's, what are your thoughts? How I mean, you live in a state where legislators make these claims. How do you deal with these?
I think any reporter. I mean, again, it's my job to report both sides, and when someone makes a claim, I do try to find out if there's, well, in the case of this issue, I can usually get a quote from Planned Parenthood or NARAL, or because, frankly, it's difficult to get physicians to talk publicly about this because of the
backlash and
the backlash.
Well, and they're also under threat. I mean, they have their lives are on the line here.
Correct. So, but usually, Planned Parenthood's political arm in St. Louis is very receptive. You know, I can get a hold of somebody, and they'll get somebody lined up so they can at least say, okay, here's, and it's not just he said, she said. They usually have some pointing to some medical journal or other thing to back up what they're saying. I think in the case of what the congressman said, there are many abortion opponents who disagree with him on the body shutting down part. I mean, they agree with him. They want to ban abortion in the case of any rape, but they disagree with him on that part. So there's different nuances about this. But I think as a reporter covering it, it's your job to point that out. Again, I don't take sides. I'm not a columnist per se. I just, you know, I write the news, and I do it at the Beacon, and we're a nonprofit, so we don't take sides either. But I do try to make sure that I've got, you know, every side reflected in this, so people can say, okay, the legislator or whoever is saying this, and this is what the medical community is saying. I think a reporter does have a responsibility to show that it's not just one side on this. And I think most reporters are at least trying. I mean, we all try. I mean, part of it's the strain of time, and part of it's, frankly, the news industry these days, especially on the newspaper side, you know, has been decimated, so they don't have as many reporters who can focus on all this and spend all the time that's needed sometimes to get all the facts for all the issues that they cover. And so sometimes they do shorthand, and sometimes that works, and sometimes it doesn't.
Well, we will continue following this issue, and I'm glad that we had you both on to bring out some facts that are missing from a lot of the reporting. Jo Manny's covered politics at the St. Louis Dispatch for almost 30 years. She covered Todd Akin for 20 years.
Yeah.
And Jody Jacobson is editor-in-chief with RH Reality Check, and you can find their work at yourcallradio.org. Thank you both for joining us.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. And this Sunday is Women's Equality Day, and I'll be moderating an all-day event about voting in California, along with what we can do to get more women's voices in the media. It's at the African American Arts and Culture Complex. Starts at 10 o'clock on Sunday, 762 Fulton Street in San Francisco. You can find more information at the Your Call Facebook page. Thanks for listening. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's Your Call, and here's what's coming up on. Who are the independents? On the next Your Call, we'll have an open line to independents. According to a Gallup poll, more Americans identify as Democrats than Republicans, 31% to 27%. Last year, the percentage of Americans identifying as independents increased to 40%. Do you identify as an independent? What issues do you care about? Join us at 10 or email feedback at yourcallradio.org. Where do independents fit within the two-party political system? It's Your Call with me, Rose Aguilar, and you. Support for Your Call comes from the listeners of KALW. To listen to past shows or to sign up for our daily podcast, visit yourcallradio.org. Malihe Raz is on, and Ali Budner produced the show. Matt Martin is executive producer. Pete Misick is our web editor, and Becca Hoekstra is our intern. Phil Hartman is our chief engineer, and David Latulipe is the studio engineer. Our theme music was composed and produced by Live Human. Your Call is produced by KALW in San Francisco. Special thanks to our partners at KUSP in Santa Cruz. You can email us at feedback@yourcallradio.org.
Next time on Smiley and West from PRI.
As we prepare for the Republican and Democratic conventions this summer, we'll hear from one woman who was wronged by both parties. Former Agriculture Department employee, Shirley Sherrod.
You can give up your dream of leaving and, stay here and fight. Fight to make it different.
Shirley Sherrod, next time on Smiley and West.
From PRI.
Join us for Smiley and West this afternoon at 1, right after the Tavis Smiley Show, which heads your way at high noon, just an hour from now. Good afternoon and an hour. This is David Latulipe in for Alan Farley, with a reminder that matching gifts from your employer can double or even triple your support to KALW. KALW members working at more than 125 companies have already taken that step. Won't you ask your employer? Easy money for KALW, your local public radio station. The time is 11 o'clock.
Hello, I'm Ben James. Welcome to World Have Your Say, where you're in charge of the global conversation on the BBC.
I think this is a relief for everyone, and yeah, I think this will be like positive for most Norwegians.
As you began to react to the verdict in the case of Anders Breivik in Norway on our last programme, many of you got in touch on Facebook and Twitter to criticise the sentence as too lenient. So, has Norway got it right on Breivik? We'll hear people on either side of the argument talk it through. Post on facebook.com/worldhaveyoursay. Also, the US anti-doping agency stripped Lance Armstrong of his 7 Tour de France titles and bans him for life. It's after he announced he'd no longer fight their accusations, although he maintains his innocence and he's never failed a drugs test. What's your reaction?